This is Gabriel Wrench with the Cross Baltic Daily News Brief for Tuesday, June 16th, 2020. Before we get into this news brief, I have some good news for you. In fact, probably the only good news in this brief. Because of the COVID craze, we are moving our early bird registration deadline for our Fight Laugh Feast conference to July 31st. Registrations were obviously slow in April, but we're now humming along. We don't really want you to miss out on our coming conference, so we are extending early bird registration to get you there. This is obviously not about the money for us. We really do want an opportunity to bring all our friends together for some good fellowship, psalm singing, and to hear from some high-octane speakers to the glory of God and to the good of his people. So don't wait. Sign up for our annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, October 1st to the 3rd. Seating is limited. Go to fightlaughfeast.com to register today. Civil rights law protects gay and transgendered workers, Supreme Court rules. This really is an atrocious ruling. According to the New York Times, the Supreme Court ruled Monday that a landmark civil rights law protects gay and transgender workers from workplace discrimination, handing the movement for LGBT equality a stunning victory. An employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender defies the law, said, guess who, Justice Neil Gorsuch. Until Monday's decision, it was legal in more than half the states to fire workers for being gay, bisexual, or transgender. The vastly consequential decision extended workplace protections to millions of people across the nation, continuing a series of Supreme Court victories for gay rights even after President Trump transformed the court with two appointments. The lopsided ruling coming from a fundamentally conservative court was a surprise. Justice Gorsuch, who was Trump's first appointment to the court, was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Sonia Sotomayor and Ellen Kagan. The decision covered two sets of cases, was the court's first on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights since the retirement in 2018 of Justice Anthony Kennedy, who wrote the majority opinions in all four court major gay rights decisions. Proponents of these rights had worried that his departure would halt the progress of the movement toward equality. No, it didn't. The case concerned Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. We've talked a lot about this act over the last number of years on our show, and here it comes again. And the 1964 Act bars employment discrimination based on race, religion, national origin, and, yes, sex. The question for the justices was whether that last prohibition, discrimination because of sex, applies to many millions of gay and transgender workers. Do you think so? No. Gorsuch wrote that it did. An employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex, he wrote. Gorsuch goes on to say, it is impossible to discriminate against a person for being homosexual or transgender without discriminating against that individual based on sex. Unbelievable. Justice Samuel Alito, in a dissent joined by Justice Clarence Thomas, wrote that the majority had abandoned its judicial role. There is only one word for what the court has done today, legislation, Justice Alito wrote. The document that the court releases in the form of a judicial opinion interpreting a statute, but that is deceptive. A more brazen abuse of our authority to interpret statutes is hard to recall, he wrote. The court tries to convince readers that it's merely enforcing the terms of the statute, but that is preposterous. The common understanding of sex discrimination in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, Justice Alito wrote, was bias against women or men and did not encompass discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. If Congress wanted to protect gay and transgendered workers, he wrote, it could pass a new law. After today's decision, Justice Alito wrote, plaintiffs may claim that the failure to use their preferred pronoun violates one of the federal laws prohibiting sex discrimination. Yes, that is where this is going. Justice Alito goes on to say, although the court does not want to think about the consequences of its decision, we will not be able to avoid those issues for long. The entire federal judiciary will be mired for years in disputes about the reach of the court's reasoning. And here's Gorsuch's weak reply. He said, "We do not purport to address bathrooms, locker rooms, or anything else of the kind," he wrote. Whether other policies and practices might or might not qualify as unlawful discrimination or find justifications under other provisions of Title VII are questions for future cases, not these. That is unbelievable. If Gorsuch cannot see the slippery slope that they just created here, why is he a Supreme Court justice? As my friend Marcus Pittman astutely pointed out, "Hey, SCOTUS, what if I have an all-woman's gym and some dude puts on a wig and demands that I hire him?" Huh. De Blasio says coronavirus contact tracers will not ask positive cases if they have attended a BLM protest. How about that? According to Discern.com, New York City's coronavirus contact tracers have been instructed not to ask those who test positive for COVID-19 if they have participated in any Black Lives Matter protests. A spokesman for the mayor's office reported, "No person will be asked proactively if they attend a protest." De Blasio, who announced his test and trace program in early May to hire 1,000 contact tracers, said he plans to reveal Monday how many residents have been questioned so far. Tracers are tasked with asking positive cases to recall contacts and individuals they may have exposed, Cohen detailed. Tracers are also instructed to inquire of anyone they have been within 6 feet or for the last 10 minutes. If a tested individual wants to disclose whether any of their close contacts took place during a protest, they have the freedom to provide additional information. If a person wants to proactively offer that information, there is an opportunity for them to do so, said Cohen. NYPD disbands plainclothes anti-crime units. This is according to Fox 5 in New York. The NYPD is eliminating its anti-crime units on the precinct level and public housing area level, Commissioner Dermot Shea announced on Monday. About 600 officers will be reassigned to the Detective Bureau, neighboring policing programs, and other units effective immediately. Anti-crime officers typically operate in plainclothes, Shea said, and focus on getting illegal guns off the streets of New York. That has led to those cops being involved in a number of shootings, the commissioner said. He added that the department will continue to fight violent crime and illegal guns through many modern programs and units. "This is 21st century policing," Shea said. "Intelligence, data, shot spotter, video, DNA, and building prosecutable cases. It continues to be building these cases, cases on a small number of people that unfortunately still terrorize a part of this city." The commissioner said the elimination of the units at all 77 precincts and a handful of housing units is a big move in the culture of policing, but an important part of the overall reform. "We struggle with it. I believe as a police executive is not keeping crime down. It's keeping crime down and keeping the community working with us," Shea said. "And I think those two things at times have been at odds." In a statement, the union that represents rank-and-file cops questioned the wisdom of the commissioner's move. The union states, "Anti-crime's mission was to protect New Yorkers by proactively preventing crime, especially gun violence. Shooting and murders are both climbing steadily upward, but our city leaders have clearly decided that proactive policing isn't a priority anymore." PBA President Patrick Lynch said, "They chose this strategy. They will have to reckon with its consequences." Coronavirus mask charade continues. If you have been following me on social media during the coronavirus pandemic, whatever you want to call it, my big COVID hashtag kick has been arbitrary shutdowns do not work. Think about all the unexplainable measures and inconsistent shutdowns found in the various statewide resolutions. What is an essential job? What's a non-essential job? Why is Walmart open and churches are still closed? Last I checked, religion was specifically mentioned in the First Amendment, but Walmart? Really? Why does my local restaurant have to shut down, but our mayor continues to receive his paycheck? He must be an essential job. What in tarnations is social distancing in the first place? Give me one scientific study supporting social distancing. John Maguire, over at the American Thinker, points this out. "Anyone claiming the 6-foot rule is not arbitrary should explain why the World Health Organization suggests a 3-foot distance, and why Australia, Norway, Sweden, and Finland have adopted that rule, and why Germany and other countries use 4.5 feet. Does the coronavirus behave differently in Europe?" And then, of course, here in the U.S., the big social distancing footage limit is 6 feet. But note this, 99% of the people who contract the coronavirus get over it. They don't die. They get better. Yada, yada, yada. When this whole COVID panic went down, my local city council gave me all this data as if they were basing their decision off the data. But in our postmodern world, data is a tool for those in power to make irrational decisions. This is Gabriel Wrench with Cross Politic News. Support Rowdy Christian Media and join our club at FightLaughFeast.com. With your partnership, and it really is a partnership, you will get a Fight Laugh Feast t-shirt, discounts to our annual conference, which is again October 1st through 3rd, and access to our club portal. Our club portal includes episodes on pastors and politics, East Coast tour content, God and government, backstage interviews with Vody Bachum, Pastor Wilson, James White, Tom Askell, Eric Erickson, David French, and more. You can find all our shows on our app, which you can download at your favorite app store. Just search FightLaughFeast.com. And lastly, as I mentioned again, we hope to meet you at our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through 3rd. Go to FightLaughFeast.com to register now. Have a great day, and Lord bless.